Raised by wolves with canine DNA in his blood, having trained more than 24,000 vets, helping you and your fur babies thrive. Live in studio, it's Pet Talk Today with Will Bangura, answering your pet behavior and training questions. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome your host and favorite pet behavior expert, Will Bangura.
Happy August 15th, pet lovers. I'm Will Bangura, and you're listening to another episode of Pet Talk Today. Today, we're going to be doing a specific, special episode on one topic, and this is going to be for the audio podcast only. We're not live streaming on Facebook right now, but we're going to be talking about dogs that are afraid to ride in the car. Do you have a dog that has anxiety when it comes to getting in the car and riding? I mean, it could be something as simple as a dog just, you know, panting a little bit in the car, to a full-blown panic attack where you've got a dog with a tucked tail, trembling, drooling profusely, and a dog that can be so scared they can actually lose control of their bladder and their bowel. So it could be bad. It could be moderate. Maybe it's a mild thing, but it can be a big deal and is a big deal for about 7 to 20% of dogs that are out there. So we're going to be talking about what does it take to have a dog that is just scared to death of riding in the car. What are the steps that you need to take to go from that to having a dog that can be in the car very calmly and can relax and can, if nothing else, be neutral about the car ride? Or maybe if we really, really do a good job of the behavior modification and you've got the right dog, maybe the dog can actually learn to love to go for a car ride. All right. Before we get into the topic, let me just thank all of my regular listeners. I love you. I'm getting so many fantastic emails from you. Keep sending me those emails. If you've got a question specifically about your dog, or if you've got an idea about a topic that you would like me to talk about on Pet Talk Today, shoot me an email. You can reach me at will@pettalktoday.com. That's Will, W-I-L-L, at pettalktoday.com. And also, if you love what we do, please take a minute out of your day. Write us a 5-star review. Go to whatever podcasting platform that you're listening to this on, and please give us a 5-star review. That's the best thank you that you can give us. It also allows the podcast to go higher in rankings. And by doing that, it allows more people to know about Pet Talk Today, to listen to the podcast, and start taking the techniques and the tools and the tips that we give you and start improving the relationship that they have with their pet and start relieving their pets of suffering, especially if we're talking about anxiety, fears, phobias, aggression, reactivity, those areas that I specialize in. All right, enough of the shameless plug. Let's get into it after I take a little sip of the coffee here. It's still early in the morning here, August 15th, where I am in Phoenix. So I wanted to talk about and do a podcast specifically on dogs that are afraid of riding in the car. Now, that topic, or as far as the dog itself, can show up in different varieties. You can have a puppy or a dog that has never gone for a car ride ever. So they've never had a bad experience, right? And the first time you get them in the car, they are freaking out, trembling, drooling, vocalizing, crying, screaming, panting, and they're freaking out. Then you've got dogs that started out just fine riding in the car. We'd go to the dog park. We'd go to doggy daycare. We'd go take a little trip. We'd go hiking. And getting in the car, going for those little rides were just fine. And then all of a sudden, several months later, a year, year and a half later, all of a sudden that same dog now is scared to death of riding in the car. That's a whole different ballgame. We're going to be talking about that as well. Then there are dogs that the only experience that they've had riding in the car culminates in something uncomfortable. What do I mean by that? Getting the dog in the car and immediately going to the vet office and they're poking and prodding the dog. The dog's having a scary, uncomfortable experience being at the vet. And then we get back in the car and go home. Or we get in the car. The only time the dog gets in the car, we get in the car, we go to the groomer. And maybe we don't like all the stimulation of the groomers where we've got all kinds of dogs there barking, yelling, people coming and going, hair dryers blowing, and maybe your dog's there for several hours. And on top of it, maybe your dog just does not appreciate being groomed. And again, more prodding, right? Cleaning the ears, cleaning the clipping the nails. If you've got a dog that needs to have a clipper cut. So there's a lot of scary things that can happen at the veterinarian's office. There's a lot of scary things that can happen at the groomers. What's your dog's experience as it pertains to getting in the car? Yeah, some of you are getting it right now. That the only time you've got your dog in the car is when you went somewhere uncomfortable. And so that is something that makes sense, right? If the dog's association with getting in the car is something negative, like going to the vet or going to the groomer, well, we can understand perhaps why the dog is afraid of being in the car. But when we've got the other two situations, one where we've been riding in the car, everything's been just fine, and then boom, all of a sudden the dog's afraid of getting in the car and going for a car ride again. That one is hard for us to decipher and figure out what's going on. Or when we've got a dog or a puppy that's never had the experience of going in a car, so it doesn't have anything bad to associate with riding in a car, but yet it gets in the car and it's freaking out. That's the other one that's difficult for us to understand, isn't it? So let's talk about the first thing. Let's talk about the dog or the puppy that has never had an experience riding in the car, and you get the dog or puppy in the car and it's absolutely freaking out. Now, there's two varieties of this. There's the dog that has the temperament, that has the character, that new things are really, really, really scary, but they can get over that hump relatively easy. And then there are dogs out there that new things are incredibly scary, and it's very, very, very difficult to get them over the hump. And I'll add to that, that when it comes to dogs that have anxiety with the car, sometimes it's an isolated anxiety, just car anxiety. Then we have other dogs that are afraid of riding in the car, and it's a much bigger, more pervasive issue as it comes to anxiety. We find out, hey, it's not just the car that the dog is afraid of, but the dog has really bad separation anxiety, and the dog's afraid of strangers, and the dog is very skittish when there's any kind of a loud noise that happens, and it's afraid of thunderstorms and fireworks, and is afraid of dogs. And whenever we brought a new fan home and we set the new fan up, and the dog's scared to death of going in the room because of the fan. So that type of dog right there that has that very general pervasive anxiety that goes across many different lines into many different areas. Typically, when we have a dog like that, there's one or two things that are going on, and sometimes a combination of both. We may have a dog or a puppy that was taken out of its litter or away from its mom too soon, and that same dog could be a dog or a puppy that had little to no socialization. And really, when I say socialization, I want you to think about exposure, because that's what's important, all right? It's not that we need your dog during socialization to interact with, to be petted, and to play with every person that is in the world. It's not that we need your dog to interact with and sniff butts and play with every dog that's in the world when we talk about socialization. What we're really talking about is getting your dog exposed to as many different things in the world as possible so that it's not scary. And you've got that small window of time, literally. That exposure time or that socialization critical period is from 3 weeks of age, and you don't even have the puppy at 3 weeks, right? 3 weeks, right? Up until 13 weeks of age. Now, think about this. If you were to get a brand new puppy, typically most people are getting the puppy at about 8 or 9 weeks of age. And the critical socialization period, that critical period of exposure that dogs need to have happen, that critical period starts at 3 weeks of age, and that pretty much ends at about 13 weeks of age. And if you've got the puppy at 8 or 9 weeks, what's happening when you first get the puppy? Most people are not letting the puppy out. They're keeping the puppy sequestered because they're afraid it doesn't have all of its shots. So they're afraid that the puppy's going to get parvo or distemper. Here's the thing. Get your new puppy out and about and exposed to everything as much as possible. Don't worry. Now, I'm not a veterinarian. I can't give out vet advice. But what I can tell you is that veterinarians who continued their education to specialize in behavior, that are veterinary behaviorists, all of them in North America, and quite frankly, all within the world, are in agreement. It's more important to get your puppy around everything, exposed to everything early on, than worry about parvo and distemper. Now, they're definitely advocating, hey, get your puppy vaccinated. But quite frankly, the number one cause of death for dogs under the age of 3 is behavioral euthanasia. Now, I don't know if you know what I mean when I say that. Behavioral euthanasia, that's a syndrome where you've got dogs with behavior problems. They've not had pet parents that have helped them get over those behavior problems. They end up in the shelter, maybe not just once, maybe twice, maybe 3 times, maybe 3 different families failed them. And now the dog gets euthanized. Yeah, because there is a overcrowding in all of our shelters, right? And if we've got dogs with lots of behavior problems and somebody doesn't decide that they're going to invest the time and perhaps sometimes the money if you hire a professional to help you with your dog, that dog gets recycled somewhere else. And until somebody helps that dog, the dog ends up back at the shelter. Well, eventually they get euthanized. That's what behavioral euthanasia is. So we've got dogs, we've got puppies that have a pervasive anxiety about everything. Now, when you've got a dog or a puppy like that, you've got a much bigger problem than the dog having a fear of riding in the car. You've got a problem where you may need to consult with a veterinary behaviorist, as I'm talking about, because you may have a dog that genetically has some problems or medically has some problems, because it would be very unnatural, very unnormal for a brand new puppy to be afraid of everything. I mean, most puppies are, you know, sometimes you get a shy puppy, but most puppies are happy-go-lucky, bouncing around. They're interested in exploring things. They're curious. But if you've got a puppy that's afraid of everything, well, there might be something going on there. It hasn't had enough experiences in life, right, to say that, oh, this is all about trauma. And then again, there are lots of different dogs out there that we have followed from conception until much later in life, beyond the litter, beyond adoption, going into their life 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 years in some cases, depending upon how long the dog lived, following them And one of the things that we know is there are all kinds of puppies that have had proper socialization, proper exposure, have not experienced any trauma, and yet they're afraid of everything. What is going on there? Well, oftentimes we've got a puppy or a dog that has some genetic components to their behavior. Now, it's not just that it's a genetic component, right? There's nature and nurture. There's having to live in the world where we've got all kinds of different stimuli bombarding us, the dogs being bombarded by different stimuli. It's one thing, though, to act as though there's a real threat, right? And be fearful and anxious. And it's a whole nother thing to believe that everything everywhere is a threat where you need to go into fight or flight when there is no real threat. I mean, imagine if we were driving our vehicle down the street and we looked over our shoulder to the left and we saw somebody standing by the bus stop talking to nobody. There's no one else around and they're screaming and they're yelling and they're throwing their hands and their arms up in the air. We'd think that person's nuts. They need to get back on their medication. How come they were let out of the psych hospital, right? We'd understand that that person most likely has a mental illness, that they have psychiatric problems. It's interesting, though, that oftentimes it doesn't even pop into our head that there can be some dogs that have psychiatric problems. There can be some dogs that have mental illness. They're a mammal, and all mammals can have the same things that we have, and your dog can feel. It has emotions. So anxiety attacks, panic attacks, generalized anxiety, fears, phobias, just like people, dogs can have those too. Now, it's not that every dog has a underlying neurochemical or genetic or biological basis for its behavior. But that's something that we have to also look at. So if you've got a puppy, if you've got a dog that has been scared to death from day one, you've looked into its past, everything that you can ascertain, there's not been any trauma, nothing bad has happened to the dog, especially if the fear is really severe and it's pervasive, it's across the board, then I definitely recommend that you get an appointment with a veterinary behaviorist. At least first, you want to rule out that there's any medical contributing factors. And then find a certified dog behavior consultant to help you work through those problems, because that is something that is very severe. And beyond what I can cover here in hopefully an hour, I'm going to try to keep this at minimum, try to keep it to an hour. I don't want to go over an hour. That's a long time for you guys to listen. So those dogs that are just afraid of everything, yeah, you need to make an appointment with a veterinary behaviorist. It's not that I don't want to help you with this, but and I can help you. As a matter of fact, here another shameless plug. If you can't find a certified dog behavior consultant, somebody that's qualified to help you wherever you live, I do remote virtual consultations all over the world. No, I don't need to be there. I don't need to see you. I don't need to see your dog. The job for me is to understand the underlying root cause of your dog's problem and then coach you through how to help your dog relax, be calm, and get over those issues. And it's super successful. You can go to my website at dogbehaviorist.com and reach me there if you'd like me to help you professionally. All right, let's get back into the problem of dogs riding in the car and having the fear in the car. Now, for some dogs, it's a motion sickness issue. For some dogs, it's they are getting sick to their stomach. And that brings on the anxiety. And maybe your dog is a dog that got motion sickness a couple times in the car, and now your dog is associating getting in the car with getting sick. And then before it even starts to get sick from riding in the car, as far as the motion sickness, the dog starts exhibiting anxiety because it anticipates, hey, my stomach's going to get upset and maybe this is a dog that vomits, right? So that's one thing that we need to understand, take a look at. Remember, I was talking about a dog that their experience getting in the car is going to the groomer and that not being such a fun thing for them, or going to the vet for a vet visit and that not being such a fun thing. Well, another thing that might not be fun is if you've got a dog that has motion sickness when you get in a car. If that's your dog's experience, I would expect your dog to be a little bit averse to wanting to get in the car the next time. Now, the reason I'm talking about these things is so that for us to develop the right kind of plan to help your dog get over this problem, we have to understand the problem. If we don't understand the problem real well, how can we start putting together the solution, right? So if we're talking about a dog that the issue is primarily motion sickness, well, there's two things. Number one, in an emergent situation, let's say you had to get your dog to the vet, right? But you didn't want your dog to get sick. Well, you could talk to the veterinarian. Perhaps they would recommend some type of medication that would be an anti-nausea medication that you might be able to give your dog before you go in the vehicle, right? However, that might alleviate the nausea, but the dog had still had experiences getting in the vehicle where it did get nauseous, and there's that association that might be causing the anxiety, right? So there might be a two-pronged approach. Number one, in the short term, maybe seeing if there's something like medication that can help your dog. And again, I'm not a veterinarian. These are questions for your vet. I don't want you to think that I can give out medical advice. I can't. I can talk about my experience, right? But these medical questions are things that oftentimes are part of getting your dog better, right? If you've got a dog that is afraid of everything and has been afraid of everything, and it's unrealistic and it's severe, and your dog hasn't had any bad experiences and your dog was socialized. Remember, I talked about there might be an underlying genetic component or a neurochemical component that is a part of your dog's behavior. Well, we've got medications for that. Do they cure the dog? No. But they help treat that medical component that behavior modification can't touch. If your dog is a dog that has nausea, well, at least initially, we're not going to be able to help the dog with the nausea through behavior modification. That's something that you need to talk to the vet about. Now, once we've ruled out any type of medical situations and those are being addressed, now we can start taking a look at, all right, how do we help the dog behaviorally when it comes to riding in a car to be calm and to be relaxed? Well, those of you that have listened to Pet Talk today probably already know the answer to that, and that's counterconditioning and desensitization. Counterconditioning and desensitization are the gold standard. Those are the tools. Those are the techniques for behavior modification for any dog that has fears, anxiety, phobias, reactivity, aggression. Any dog that has an underlying emotional state that is in distress, whether that be, again, fears, phobias, anxiety, stress, aggression, reactivity, the way that you deal with that is through counterconditioning and desensitization. Now, those are just really big words for exposing your dog to the triggers in a way that is controllable, in a way that is digestible, in a way that is safe, very slowly. Just as desensitization, if you think about that word, to desensitize, the dog's very sensitive to triggers. We need to expose the dog to these triggers in a very controlled, very specific, very slow, very gradual way to help the dog begin to get comfortable, to get relaxed, to have a different perception, a different association with what the car represents and what a car ride is like and what a car ride is all about. So counterconditioning and desensitization are about changing the association that the dog has with the trigger. Now, how do we go about doing that? Well, right now, we're assuming that your dog has a uncomfortable, scary, unpleasant association with the car. And what we want to do is turn that into a positive, start associating positive things with the car so that your dog can enjoy and like car rides, if nothing else, that your dog is neutral and no longer afraid of the car ride. Now, if you have a dog, and you know, we talked about dogs that are afraid of everything. We talked about also a dog that maybe their only fear is the car, right? All right, let's talk a little bit more about this before we get into behavior modification. And trust me, we're going to get into the behavior mod. Just hang tight. We're going to give you all of what you need to help get your dog over being afraid of riding in the car. But if you've got a dog and their only problem, their only fear, for the most part, from an anxiety and fear standpoint, is riding in the car, here's one thing we need to assess and evaluate. If it is severe, what do I mean by severe? Well, a dog that is just unbelievably out of control, there's absolutely no consoling the dog. There's absolutely no getting the dog to calm down and relax. We've got a, you know, let me paint the picture. We've got a dog. I did it earlier in the podcast. We've got a dog that's panting. We've got a dog where the pupils are dilated. I mean, panting hard, right? Do I sound like that? This, you know, that loud dry pant where you hear that, but very, very fast. Okay. That's an anxious pant. Pupils dilated. We've got a dog that's trembling. The tail is tucked. I said earlier, maybe the dog is salivating or drooling a lot. That's a sign of a panic attack. When it's severe like that, in most cases, you are going to need medication along with behavior modification for a while, and then you can get off the behavior medication and finish up with behavior modification. See, when it's so severe, see, when the dog is having that just severe panic attack, you cannot communicate with that dog. You cannot teach the dog anything. The dog's not in a state where it can learn anything. The dog is completely panicked. Well, when it's that severe, you have to typically use medication to help kind of just take the edge off. There's no medication that's going to cure your dog. You're not going to just give your dog a pill and then all of a sudden, boom, your dog's no longer afraid of riding in cars. But when it's really severe, we can't do the behavior modification work we need to. And we oftentimes need medication to kind of take the edge off of that. And then we can begin to do the work. And as the dog starts to get comfortable, starts to get a little more relaxed, we may be able to wean off that medication. But I don't want you guys to be afraid of giving your dog medication. If it's the right medication, I have seen it do amazing things. I've seen it do wonders for dogs. Now, does every dog respond well to every medication? Of course not. Just like every person doesn't respond well to every medication. Sometimes there's a little trial and error. But again, there are some great medications. If you think you've got a dog that fits into any of these categories that I talked about, find out, talk to your, first thing you do is you talk to your veterinarian. See if you've got a veterinary behaviorist that you can be referred to. They're the experts. They're behaviorists. They're veterinarians. They're the ones that are the experts in terms of assessing your dog for any type of medical issues or medication issues. All right. Now that we've got that out of the way, now we're talking about, we're dealing with the dog that we are not having to medicate. Now, let me just say this. Even if we had a dog that we needed to medicate, the steps are going to be the same when it comes to behavior modification. All I'm saying is that there are some dogs that we need to get kind of stabilized on some medication first before we can do the work. But even the dogs that need medication, they have to have the behavior modification work. So now is when we're really going to get into the meat and potatoes. At 30 minutes into the podcast. I'm going to let everybody know, if you want to skip the first 30 minutes and get right to the meat and potatoes, it's at 30 minutes. All right, another sip of coffee here. Remember, I said it's early here in Arizona. Okay, so for a lot of your dogs, the anxiety starts well before they're ever in the car. And what do I mean by that? When you take your dog to the car, what door do you go out of to get to the car? Do you have a garage? Do you have a door in your house that opens up into the garage? When your dog goes with you on the leash and you go out the door from the inside of the house that leads to the garage, what happens next? Do you take your dog through that door to go for a walk, or do you go out the front door, or do you go out a back door? Because think about this, you know, dogs are masters at figuring out patterns. They're masters of figuring out not only the patterns, but very black and white cause and effect associations, because one of the way they learn is through associative learning, classical conditioning. You know how when you get the leash out, they get excited? Because the only time that leash typically comes out, you're putting it on the dog, you're going immediately for a walk. And if they like walks, if it's a fun thing for them, they associate that leash with fun. And so they get excited, right? Well, if the only time your dog goes out the door that leads to the garage, you're getting in the car, and your dog has anxiety riding in the car, that anxiety might start as soon as you begin to get your dog in front of the door that leads into the garage. So what I need you to do is find out, where does the anxiety start? Okay. And for that, you're just going to go through the process of getting your dog into the vehicle, everything that you do. But I need you to pay attention to your dog's behavior very, very closely. It could be when you put your shoes on. It could be when you grab your keys or grab your purse or your wallet, or it could be when you grab your coat, right? It could be when the leash comes out or the harness or your dog's collar. Or, like I said, it could be when you walk the dog up to the door that it rarely ever goes out of, the door that leads into the garage if you have a house like that. And then we went into the car, right? And then uncomfortable things happened because maybe we went to the vet. Maybe we went to the groomer. Maybe the dog had car sickness, right? All right. Now, once we know where that anxiety starts, now that's where we begin the process of making positive associations. So let's say that our problem starts when we get the dog up to the door that leads to the garage. We're just going to say that's our starting point because we have to start somewhere. We start where the anxiety is. All right. Okay. Now, let's say that the dog starts showing mild signs of anxiety. And for every dog, it could be different. Maybe they start having a little pupil dilation, maybe a little panting, a little bit of increased heart rate, respiration. They're breathing a little bit faster, okay? Maybe that tail tucks just a little bit. Maybe their ears go back a little bit. All signs of stress. Maybe they start having tongue flicks or lip licking. Maybe they do a little paw lift or something like that. Maybe they are turning their head away. Maybe they're trying to resist us moving them with the leash to the door. Those are all things that can happen. Also, displacement behaviors can be stress signals. They might start scratching, right? Or they might start smelling their private parts. We call that a urogenital check. They might start sniffing. All right? Those are all displacement behaviors of a dog that is stressed. You might see them start to shed, have increased shedding in that moment right then and there. Find out where the stress begins for your dog. Now, wherever it begins, we need to back up to a point where your dog did not have a care in the world. All right, let's say that your dog starts showing some stress when I've got the dog on the leash and we're standing right in front of the door that leads to the garage. However, four steps back from that door, the dog had no care, no concern, no worries. That's where we start. And that's important for you to know, because a lot of people want to do this work when the dog is distressed. And your dog can't have a care in the world. Your dog needs to be loose, relaxed, happy. Your dog can focus on you. If you're talking to your dog is able to focus. If you give your dog a cue or command to sit, your dog can do that. Your dog's willing to take food. The dog's not trying to get away. You can keep the dog on a loose leash. That's what we're looking for. If your dog's showing any kind of stress, any kind of anxiety, you need to back it up where your dog doesn't have that stress, doesn't have that anxiety. That's where we start, okay? All right. Now, those of you that don't know what counter conditioning and desensitization are, we're going to be talking about that right now and how you apply that. Now, counter conditioning oftentimes is pairing high value food rewards if you've got a food motivated dog. And trust me, all dogs are food motivated. Now, you might be too close to a trigger where your dog has anxiety and they don't want to eat food. That doesn't mean your dog's not food motivated. You get your dog to the right spot away from the trigger where your dog doesn't have a care in the world. Most dogs are going to take food. The other thing is, what type of food reward are you trying to use with your dog? Make sure it's something that's super, super palatable. Look, when we're talking about this kind of work, we give your dog whatever it wants that it loves within reason, okay? I like making a food paste. I like taking canned chicken, throwing it in the blender, making a paste, and I like putting it in a squeeze bottle. You know those squeeze bottles like when you go to the restaurant, the ketchup and mustard bottle? Yeah, that have that nozzle. So I'm feeding the dog. The dog's got its mouth on that nozzle, and I'm giving a slow, steady squeeze and stream of yummy, yummy food paste when we're doing this work, for a couple of reasons. Number one, I can feed a whole lot less, right? I can feed a whole lot less. It's just this little steady stream instead of big hunks and big chunks of chicken, right? The dog gets full very quickly, and now all of a sudden the dog doesn't want to work anymore because it doesn't have any more motivation because it's full. So that's one good reason why to do that, okay? The other reason, remember I talked about dogs learn, one of the ways they learn is through association. How black and white are we able to make an experience when the dog is trying to associate two things? Well, if I'm pairing high value food rewards to the trigger, in this case, something that has to do with riding in the car, because I'm trying to associate something very positive to riding in the car, if I'm feeding pieces of food, chunks of food, there's a break in the food, a break in eating. Even if it's, okay, the dog finished, now I'm going to give it another piece. There's that little break in it. I want to associate the food the entire time the dog is associating it with the car, and I can make it more black and white, and I'm going to paint that picture for you. All right, so we're at the spot, maybe four or five steps before we get to that door. Now, this might not be the spot with your dog, but we're going to get to yours, okay? So, and this has application because the same thing we're doing here, let's say that the anxiety for your dog started when you grab the handle of the door of the car, all right? Or it started as soon as you ask the dog to hop up into the car. What we're going to do is the same. It's just that this is a different starting point. All right, so we know where our starting point is. We walk the dog up to that starting point, and then we pull out our squeeze bottle, and we start feeding constantly and continuously a very slow stream of that food paste. Feed, 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 constantly and continuously for about 1 to 3 seconds. Then we start to move away And as we start to move away, we stop feeding. Now, the sequence is important. You go to the spot. Again, the dog does not have any stress. If the dog's having stress, you've gotten too close too soon. You get to your spot. You begin feeding for about 1 to 3 seconds. And you start to move away and you stop feeding. I did not say you stop feeding and you start moving away. And that's what's important. You start moving away and then you stop feeding. So as we approach the door, but before we get to a spot where the dog's having anxiety, we start associating moving towards that door that leads to the garage with something very positive. In this case, this high-value chicken paste that we're squeezing out of the squeeze bottle. Now, we're going to do that. We're going to do that for about 5 minutes, right? We're going to start far away from the door that leads to the garage. We're going to move the dog to that spot right before the dog starts getting anxious and nervous, before the dog figures out, hey, we're going to be walking out that door that leads to the garage. We're going before the anxiety. We get to that spot. We start feeding the dog. We start feeding out of that squeeze tube. Feed, feed, feed constantly and continuously for about 1 to 3 seconds. Then we start moving away from that door, from that spot. And as we move away, we stop feeding. You're going to do that, like I said, for about 5 to 10 minutes over and over and over. And you need to do that every day, okay? Every day for at least 5 or 6 times a week. You could take a day off, maybe 2 days off, but that's it. If you want to make this go quicker, you can do this every day and you can do this a couple times a day. And it'll go quicker. But at a minimum, you need to be doing this 5 times a week. And again, your sessions need to be anywhere between 5 to 10 minutes long. Now, you're going to stay at the distance or where you're at, your starting point, for 2 weeks. We want to condition really, really well that walking up to that spot is the greatest thing in the world. If you do this 5 times a week, every day, for 2 weeks, your dog is going to learn to absolutely love this. Your dog's going to be thrilled. You think your dog gets excited when the leash comes out for going for a walk? Wait till it gets associated with this exercise, because again, you're going to be putting your leash on your dog, because don't you put your leash on the dog when you go out to get in the car? Yeah. So everything needs to be the same as if you're going to be walking out that door to go into the car. All right. So we've done this for 2 weeks. We've conditioned it. Again, counter conditioning is about changing that underlying perception, changing that underlying emotional state that your dog has with the trigger. Right now, your dog is afraid of the car and the car ride. And we're assuming, based on this example, that the fear, the anxiety starts when you get to the door that leads out to the garage. And like I said, maybe for some of you, it starts not there, but when you and the dog are right in front of the car, or you and the dog are right in front of the car and you open the car door. Wherever your dog starts getting anxious and nervous, you need to back up far enough back where your dog doesn't have a care in the world, and that's where you start. You bring your dog to that point, feed, 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 constantly and continuously, 1 to 3 seconds, start moving away from that point, and then stop feeding. Do that for 5 to 10 minutes. That's how long your sessions are. Do that 5 days a week. Do that for 2 weeks. Now, at this point, your dog should be thrilled. When you walk your dog up to that point, before you even bring out the food, your dog should be looking to you for the food. And that's one thing you want to look for. If your dog is not excited about doing this, if your dog is not like, hey, dude, hey, mom, hey, dad, where's the food? you might not be ready to move to the next step, because the next step is we're going to get a little closer. We're going to get a little closer. That's the key word, a little. Because some of us are going to get greedy and we're going to go too close too soon and the dog starts getting anxious. Trust me, if you're a little conservative, if you're a little cautious and you start this slow, you're going to finish fast. But if you start this fast, you're going to finish slow. So just take your time with this. This is not something that you should be in a race. You know, for some people, it might take 6 months before they can go for a ride of any decent distance where their dog is completely calm and relaxed. This is not something you're going to do in a day. This is not something you're going to do in 2 or 3 days. If you can do it in a day or 2 or 3 days, that's fantastic. You had a very, very mild case of this. Most people, by the time they're looking for this kind of help, it's gotten pretty severe. All right. So we've done our initial counter conditioning and desensitization at our starting point, our starting distance for 2 weeks. We've done it 5 days a week for 2 weeks. Each of our sessions, 5 to 10 minutes long. Now we've moved a little bit closer. You've got to watch your dog's body language. That lets you know if you went too close too soon. All right, let's say that the next step is I'm right at the door that leads to the garage. And let's assume some of you are right at the car door, okay? Because again, it's pretty much going to be the same thing wherever the starting point is. Okay, so what happens if now you're in front of the car door with the dog, or you're in front of the door that leads out into the garage? Well, it's the same thing as we just did. We're going to approach that point. So we're going to approach the car and get right in front of the car, or we're going to approach the door that leads to the garage. We're going to get right in front of it. As soon as we're there, as long as the dog is relaxed, comfortable, doesn't have a care in the world, we start feeding. Feed, feed, feed constantly and continuously, giving that yummy stream of chicken paste or whatever your dog loves. It can be beef. It can be anything you want, but it's got to be something super, super yummy. About 1 to 3 seconds of constant feeding. Then you start moving the dog away from that spot and stop feeding. Remember, sequence is important. Don't stop feeding first. Start moving away and feed. Because again, it's really important that we're making it very black and white why the dog is being fed. And when we're moving away from the trigger, we want the dog to understand that, hey, feeding stops. As we approach the trigger and we get to the trigger, we want to know that the dog understands that's what's causing that feeding to start. Okay, so now we're right at the door. We're doing the same thing for 2 weeks, right? We're just getting to the door. We're not touching the car door. We're not touching the door that leads to the garage yet. Now we're a month into this. Yeah, this can go slow sometimes, but I'm telling you, if you start out slow, you're going to finish fast. You start out fast, you're going to finish slower. You're not going to get it done at all. Let's go to the next step. Now, the next step might be, hey, we can get to the door of the car. We can get right in front of the car. We can get maybe right in front of the door that leads out to the garage. But maybe we can't open the door all the way. Maybe if we try to open the door all the way, the dog starts to get nervous and anxious. And we went too far too soon. We were working a little too fast. We can only work at the dog's pace. And that is where we're able to keep the dog calm and relaxed. All right. Rather than open the car door, rather than open the door that leads to the garage, how about touching the doorknob? How about touching the door handle on the car or the doorknob of the door that leads to the garage? What's your dog doing when you grab that? Is your dog showing signs of anxiety and stress? Or is your dog calm and relaxed and loose? Well, if your dog is stressed out, you went too far too soon. You might say, hey, Will, what do I do? we were just standing right in front of the door. The next step, obviously, would be to put my hand on the doorknob and open it, or put my hand on the door handle of the car and open it. Well, guess what? Before you put your hand on the knob, before you put your hand on the car handle to open the car door, you have to reach towards it, don't you? Yeah. So maybe where we have to start in this next step is just reaching towards the door, maybe 2 inches, and feed. Begin to pull our hand away, stop feeding. Reach our hand towards the door a couple inches and feed constantly and continuously for 1 to 3 seconds. Begin moving our hand away from the doorknob or the handle of the car door. Stop feeding. And again, we're looking at your dog's body language. Your dog is the feedback mechanism to let us know, are we working too quick, too soon? The dog has to be relaxed every step of the way. We need a relaxed dog that we can condition for 2 weeks. Remember, we're doing it every session, 5 to 10 minutes, at a minimum 5 times a week. We're going to stay in one spot for 2 weeks. The dog should be, at the end of those 2 weeks, thrilled about what we're doing, and we should be able to move a little bit further in the process. Okay, so let's say that, hey, we've been for 2 weeks, we've been moving our hand towards the doorknob that leads to the garage or towards the handle on the car door, if we're right in front of the car, and everything's been going fine. Well, now we're either going to do one of two things. We either can reach a little bit further before the dog gets anxious, or we can actually put our hand on the doorknob or put our hand on the handle of the car door. Don't be greedy and open up the door right away, right? How about you approach, touch that handle or the doorknob, feed, and then start moving away and stop feeding. Get the dog loving you, wanting to grab that door handle, or the dog loving you, wanting you to grab the doorknob before you ever even open it, right? Yeah. Take your time. Now, once you've got that, the next step would be, right, open the door. Well, maybe. Or maybe that's too much for your dog. Maybe the next step is turning the handle, the doorknob, and opening the door an inch. Or maybe the next step is grabbing the handle on the door of the car and opening the car door an inch. Think about little tiny slices. Each step of the way, we're breaking this down into little baby steps, and every little baby step we're associating with high-value food rewards. Getting your dog to love all these little steps along the way before it starts having anxiety. And that's your gradual and systematic desensitization. The counter conditioning is pairing and associating high-value food rewards with what your dog didn't like. But we got to keep your dog, the technical term is below threshold. When we talk about thresholds in this instance, we're not talking about like a doorway going through a threshold. We're talking about your dog's emotional state. When your dog doesn't have a care in the world, your dog's not experiencing any stress or anxiety, your dog's below threshold. Every time we're doing counter conditioning and desensitization, every time we're doing exposure therapy, if you will, that's where we need your dog to be, below threshold. When your dog is kind of at threshold or kind of moving into threshold, your dog's starting to show some very, very small, real subtle signs. It might even be hard to decipher that your dog is beginning to get anxious, stressed, or fearful. That's at threshold. Your dog over threshold is big, physical, demonstrative signs in your dog's outward behavior, like trembling, crying, trying to run away. Very obvious. Your dog's over threshold. We need to keep your dog below threshold where your dog doesn't have a care in the world. Again, any step you're at, if your dog starts showing any signs of stress, back up. You've gone too far too soon. You're working a little bit too fast. Take your time. All right. So we're at the point now where we are opening the door slightly, maybe an inch or so, right? So we begin, we open the door, we feed constantly and continuously for 1 to 3 seconds. We then close the door. Now, once we get to the point where we're actually putting our hand on the door or we're opening the door even slightly, we're not moving away. Remember, before we actually had our hand on the doorknob of the door that led into the garage, or before we had our hand on the handle of the car door, we were approaching. We were walking up to that point. And then after we fed for 1 to 3 seconds, we moved away. So we walked away and we stopped feeding. Well, now we're not walking away, because now the sequence is I reach the doorknob or the door handle and I open it up a couple inches. I feed constantly and continuously for 1 to 3 seconds. I begin to close the door and then I stop feeding. And then I wait for 1 to 3 seconds. You got to have a little pause and then you start that over again. Now, if we've been doing this for 2 weeks and your dog's been below threshold, didn't have a care in the world, your dog should love us opening that door a couple inches. Now we can either open it up a little bit more, but not all the way, or maybe we can open it up all the way. I don't know. It depends on your dog. Every dog's going to be different. Just take it slow. And don't beat yourself up if your dog starts having stress. Look, we're all greedy. It happens. Do better next time. If your dog starts experiencing stress, back up. See if your dog calms down. If your dog doesn't calm down, just quit. You're done for the day. Maybe later in the day you can try it again, but back it up. And listen, anytime your dog goes over threshold, anytime your dog starts experiencing stress and you start this up again, say the next day, don't start immediately at the last starting spot before the stress. Back up a little bit. Be a little conservative. So if your dog was fine with the door being opened a couple inches, but you took it a step too far and you opened the door up all the way, stop for the day. The next day you start, don't open the door a couple inches. Start where you're just putting your hand on the doorknob. Read the body language. Is your dog thinking you're going to go fast again and open the door all the way? Because that could happen, right? Okay. So I think you guys are starting to get the idea. Little by little, we're going to get that door open step by step. We're going to take it as slow as we need to, whatever the dog is showing us that we need to do. All right, let's assume that we've got the door open all the way and we're either going into the garage next or we're getting your dog to get into the vehicle. Maybe your dog does not want to get in the vehicle. Maybe your dog is fine as long as you're not trying to force the dog in the vehicle. The door can be open. The dog can be standing right there. But the minute you try to get the dog in the car, there's stress. Maybe when it comes to going out the door that leads to the garage, the door can be open, but your dog is scared to death to cross that threshold. Now, in this case, I'm talking about doorway threshold, not emotional threshold. So if that's the case, one of the things you want to do is start setting some treats, say, on the seat of the car when the car door is open. Just let the dog eat some treats. Just feed the dog out of the squeeze bottle. When you open the door that leads to the garage, drop a few treats on the floor close to the door. You don't want to throw them far into the garage. That's too much. Or use that squeeze bottle and squeeze a little trail, maybe a couple inches from the threshold of where that doorway is, out into the garage. Now, what you don't want to do is use that chicken paste and put it on your seat, especially if you got cloth seats, okay? What you could do if you needed to use that chicken paste to try to start off with maybe your dog licking something in the car, just getting its snout in there an inch before you get the dog in there 3 inches, 4 inches, 6 inches, a foot, get the dog actually in the car. You can use some packing tape or just regular tape. Put some tape on the seat. Put some tape on the carpeting, on the floor, if that's where you start. And your dog is standing outside of the car, but licking some chicken paste or taking some treats from inside the car. It's not ready to put a paw in there. It can barely put its snout in the car. Or we're doing the same thing, getting the dog from inside the house into the garage, slowly and gradually. Once you get the dog into the garage and you feed, start going immediately back in the house, stop feeding. Do that back and forth. Don't get greedy. As soon as you get the dog eating a little bit of food in the car, the dog's still not in the car, move the dog away and stop feeding. And bring the dog back, feed, move the dog away, stop feeding, bring the dog back, feed, move the dog away, stop feeding. Again, wherever your point is, you're going to do that for about 2 weeks. And if you're doing it right and your dog's below threshold, after 2 weeks, your dog loves this. Your dog's ready to go another step closer. Now, if you've got a really fearful dog, you may have only been able to take a step towards the car in the garage. The other thing I want to mention to you, your dog might be scared to death to approach the car in the garage, but your dog might not be afraid to approach the car in the driveway. I want you to think about that, because you can begin this process in the driveway and maybe your starting point is a whole lot closer. Okay. Now, eventually you're going to have to do the work in the garage, or you're always going to be taking the dog out the front door and getting your dog in the car. But you can get a little fat. You can move a little quicker oftentimes if you start with the vehicle in the driveway. All right. So let's say we've got the dog either eating a little bit of that chicken paste off of, we've got a piece of tape either on the carpet in the car, or maybe we've got a little piece of tape on the back seat, and the dog is licking some of that yummy chicken paste off of there. The next thing that we're going to do is, we are going to take the front seats. If we want the dog in the back seat, it depends where you want the dog. And listen, what I don't recommend when you start this is trying to make the dog jump up really high in the back of a truck or in the back of an SUV and stay in that little back area all by itself. Start this with the back seat. Start it with the back seat of a lower vehicle if you have one. If you don't, well, you got to do what you got to do. Now, you want to take the front seats and you want to push them all the way forward so you have as much space as possible. The more space you have, the less scary it is for the dog. The more confined it is, the scarier it's going to be for your dog. All right, let's say our next step in the process is, now we need to get the dog partially in the car. Get one paw in, get two paws in, and get the dog eating. And then maybe the next step is, you know, you're getting three paws in. Now, one of the things that you might need to do is you might need to have a helper. Because one thing that you can do is have your dog at one of the rear doors of the car. Let's say your dog is at the rear driver's side, and that rear door is open on the driver's side. Your dog is, you know, eating chicken paste off a piece of tape that's on the back seat. Your helper is next to the dog, helping the dog eat. The leash is on the dog. You have gone to the passenger side rear door and actually gotten in the vehicle. And you've got your own squeeze bottle. You've got your own treats. And now you are trying to lure and coax your dog a little bit further into the car. Again, don't push this. Take it slow. And maybe you're at one spot, one position for more than 2 weeks before you move forward. Maybe you're there for 3 weeks. Maybe you're there for 4 weeks. Now, what I will say is, if you're doing everything right and you've done something for 8 weeks in one spot and you're not making much progress, you're not making any progress, and you really are doing things correctly, that's a sign if you didn't get too far, this is another dog that might need some medication to get over the hump. Because there are some dogs that, hey, we know right up front, we're not even going to be able to begin this process until we can take away some of that anxiety. And then there are dogs that, hey, we can begin the process, but then we get to a certain point and they want to put the brakes on. And again, how do you know if you're there? Well, you can't know 100%, but again, normally we're able to move a little bit every 2 weeks if we're working five times a week and we're doing it right. So maybe you did it 3 weeks. We're not really able to move forward. You've done it 4 weeks. You're not able to move forward. 5 weeks, still not moving forward. 6 weeks. If you get to 8 weeks and you can't move forward, remember, we were supposed to move forward every 2 weeks. If you got to 8 weeks and you can't move forward, then perhaps contact your vet, contact a veterinary behaviorist. You know, definitely if you got to that point, I'm going to be contacting a certified behavior consultant. You want to make sure you're using a certified behavior consultant. No disrespect to dog trainers, but dog trainers primarily are doing obedience training, teaching a dog to heel, sit, lay down, come. Nuisance behaviors, maybe helping you with jumping or nuisance barking or getting on the counter or the furniture. But when it comes to dealing with these more severe problems with underlying emotional states of fear, anxiety, phobias, reactivity, aggression, a behavior consultant is the person who specializes in behavior management and dealing with those more severe behaviors. Okay, so we're getting the dog in the vehicle. Let's assume, hey, we've got the dog in the vehicle. We can go in and we're out. Go in, we feed, start going out, we stop feeding. Go in, we feed, we start going out, we stop feeding. We go in the car, feed, we start getting out of the car, we stop feeding. And we've done that for 2 weeks, and the dog is loving that exercise. What's the next step? Next step is getting the dog in there, closing the door, and then feeding, and then opening the door and getting the dog out. Get the dog in, close the door, feed, open the door, get the dog out. Then the next step after that might be, okay, you close the door, and the dog's in there, and you're feeding. Well, you can't be feeding and driving at the same time, right? Okay, this is where you need that helper. Somebody that your dog knows, somebody that your dog is really comfortable, has to take the role of feeding the dog when we have to start going for the car ride. We're not there yet, though. We're not going for a car ride. Where we are is you moving towards the driver's seat and getting in. So how the dog's in the vehicle with a helper, the back door is closed, the helper is feeding your dog. Can you get in the vehicle and sit in the driver's seat and close the door? Or does your dog start showing signs of stress somewhere before that? If your dog started showing stress somewhere before that, remember, you have to back up to the spot where your dog doesn't have stress, stay there for 2 weeks, and then try to move a little bit further in this process. All right, let's assume now that we're able to get into the driver's seat. We're able to close the door. What's our next step? Putting the keys in the ignition or pushing the ignition button, right? If you've got a newer car, you're not putting a key in the ignition. Turning on the car. Maybe turning on the car gets your dog going crazy. Well, pushing the button and turning it off right away. Turn it on, turn it off. Turn it on, turn it off. Turn it on, turn it off. I know it's going to be bad on your battery, bad on your alternator. But that's sometimes what we have to do, because sometimes it's turn it on, feed, turn it off. Turn it on, feed, turn it off. Turn the car on, feed, turn it off, stop feeding. Turn the car on, feed, turn the car off, stop feeding. Get the dog used to that. Then the next step might be just putting it in gear and the dog feeling the car move, you know, that half an inch. And you're feeding there and you stay there for maybe 2 weeks. And then it might be you're able to very slowly go 10 feet in the vehicle and you're feeding the whole time. And then you're stopping. And you're going 10 feet, you're feeding the whole time and you're stopping. You're going 10 feet while you're doing that. You feed constantly and continuously. And then as you stop moving, the feeding stops. Now, all of a sudden, the dog's associating the movement of the vehicle with the car. As long as you're not moving fast, as long as you're not moving a long distance, you might be okay for a little while there for a couple weeks. Now, you want to begin to condition the dog and get the dog used to distance before you go faster. So start slow. The car should always be driving slow right now. And little by little, you're adding some distance. Do not take turns. Do not take a turn in the car yet. Do not go over hills or bumps and humps. This should be a very slow, very smooth, very short duration, which could be 10 feet. As your dog starts to like that slow, short movement of the vehicle, we start adding more distance. Once we're able to go down the road, you know, we're assuming we're on our, hopefully we live on a street that's quiet and calm, and not a street that's going, you know, 40, 50 miles an hour. But we get in the car and it might be that we're only able to back out of the driveway and we have to stop there. But it might be that, you know, we can go a couple blocks down the road. Once you can get the dog happy, going at very slow speeds for about 5 minutes, I know that seems like a long time and you got to build up to that depending upon your dog. But remember I said, if you start slow, you're going to finish fast. This is a game. Think about it. All these little, the process is the same. It's just knowing when you get to move a little closer, when you get to take that next step. The process is the same, except when you're looking at, oh, I went a little bit too fast too soon. The dog's over threshold. I need to back up. But every step you take, the process is the same. Now, some of you just need a little help thinking creatively when you're wondering what's that intermediary step, right? So some of you are saying, well, you know, we're great standing in front of the car, but I can't open the car door. We're stuck. No, you're not stuck. You move your hand 2 inches towards the door, maybe, and you're okay. Again, break things down into little tiny pieces. If you were to take a movie of every step of the way, and you were able to break it down frame by frame by frame by frame, this is kind of what we're doing in counter conditioning and gradual systematic desensitization, moving frame by frame by frame. And every step of the way, we're looking at the dog, making sure the dog does not have a care in the world. The dog is calm. The dog is relaxed. The dog's going to start liking this game. And when it starts figuring out, hey, I can manipulate the system to get that yummy squeeze bottle of yummy, yummy chicken paste, things are going to start going a little faster. As you go from one step to the next, it will progressively go a little bit faster if you're doing the work right and you're keeping the dog below a threshold. Now, before you start increasing speed, start working on turns. Before you start working on speed, start working on stops. Stop slowly and then start again. Stop. All these little components are things that your dog could get nervous. Your dog can get nervous on a turn. That's different than going forward for a very short duration for at a slow speed. Turning is different. That could be a component that scares the dog. Slowing down and stopping is a component. You don't want to just hit the brakes hard. That's going to really scare the dog, right? But little by little, what happens if down the road you got to stop quick? So yeah, you're going to start getting the dog desensitized to starting and stopping. Initially, you start real slow, but little by little, you speed up the start. Same thing with the stop. Initially, you stop real slow and gently. Little by little, you're going to stop a little harder and a little faster. but not faster than the dog's pace. I can't say that enough. You've got to go slow. Watch your dog every step of the way. Make sure your dog is calm and relaxed. Okay. We've been working on the car movement slow. We've been working on turning. We've been working on starts and stops. Now we can also start to go a little faster, but we don't want to turn faster. We don't want to stop faster. We don't want to start faster. We are just going to go at our slow speed forward and very slowly bring up speed. Again, watch the dog. Do this gradually so your dog doesn't go over threshold. Once you've got the speed on a straightaway up to about, I don't know, let's say 45 miles per hour, now start working on turns, but bring the speed way down. Way down. And now you start working on starts and stops, but bring the speed way, way, way down. And then little by little, bring up speed on turns. Little by little, bring up speed on starting and stopping. Then it's all about more duration. So the biggest thing that you need to take away from this is going slow, having patience, making sure that your timing is really good, your sequence is really good, making sure that your dog is not over threshold. You want to go slow. Remember what I said over and over. Start slow, you're going to finish fast. You start fast, you're going to finish slow. Thank you so much. Hopefully that this is helpful. I want you guys to practice, practice, practice. There are no quick fixes, but if you put in the time, this works. I guarantee you this works. You just got to put in the work. Hey, do me a favor. If you love what we do, go ahead, give us a 5-star review. I'm Will Bangura. You've been listening to Pet Talk today. Share this with your friends. Share this with your family. Definitely share this with your dog. Have a good day. I'm out of here. Hee hee hee.